for Chairman Sharp, Senators Lehman, Senator, Representative Davies, and Representative, Dyson, and, I don't know, and Co-Chairman Rutberg. We do have a quorum to conduct business. I want to thank everybody for attending today. This is a major and extraordinary issue that's facing our state. This particular committee was put together by resolution of the last legislature to make recommendations to the 21st legislature, which I believe convenes on the 19th of January, 1999, to deal with the issue of electrical restructuring here in Alaska. The I think Alaska is extremely unique in as much as we're not connected to the national electrical grid, but we're not unique in the desire for competitive utility services and lowering to consumers of their utility and electric power bills, as well as all other utilities. There are a number of major issues that will be addressed during our meeting, and we have a really short, compressed time period in which to formulate our recommendations. Only some 5 months, as well as a political campaign and a gearing up for the next legislative session. So this committee will do its job as expeditiously as possible. I know that the committee members have already received literally reams of information, which we may be suffering from information overload on this issue. But like everything up here, we'll try to keep it simple, right, Mr. Chairman? But it's not a simple issue, as we all know. Our indications are also that the 105th Congress will not be taking any action on electrical restructuring on a nationwide basis during this particular year. But Alaska, like many other states, needs to deal with this issue, and we will do that. Among the questions I think that I would like to be brought forward to the committee, and one of the major purposes of this committee meeting today is to inform the committee members and bring to the attention of the people of the state of Alaska the key central issues on this particular topic. I'm concerned whether this particular issue is going to end up being a zero-sum game, where there's going to be losers and winners, something we need to be very careful of, given the literally billions of dollars of public money that have been put into the generation and the distribution systems and the electrical utilities in the state, whereas as much as 95% of the retail electrical distribution estate is consumer-owned and not investor-owned, which makes us distinctly different than most other states in the union. We also are going to be very concerned about what happens when one utility comes in and cherry picks all the large customers and leaves the other utilities with only the residential or lower rate paying base. And then what happens if one utility threatens the survivalship of another utility when they have to struggle for survivorship? And what protections will be in place for consumers who want reduced rates and high reliability from their electric provider? That's to say, what are we going to do about the universal service issue to make sure that everybody is provided with power in this state? And do we need, as the state of Alaska, to follow the lead of some other states, for example, Vermont, Maine, California, Michigan, and adopt a consumer electric rights bill of rights to protect the individual consumers here if and when electrical restructuring takes place here? And then what guidance do we as a committee and the legislature need to give to the APUC in setting the, we should set the policy, they are the regulators, so we need to be able to formulate the policy guidelines within any new statutes that we bring forward. And with that, Senator Sharp, do you have any brief comments or something you'd like to make?
I'll just add to what you said, Mr. Chairman, and that my desire is also to make sure that the electric customers of the state of Alaska get the most economical source of power and the most reliable source of power. But that combination, I believe, is what we want to seek out. Way that we've operated over the years with specified service areas granted by the APUC, may be challenged severely by allowing transfer or competition within those given service areas, especially in the large industrial areas, and searching out and where there has been successes in lower 48 on this exact situation. It's fairly difficult to find any successes yet. There's a lot of movement going on mergers and jockeying for position, but the actual results are yet to materialize in most instances. So I'll be interested in getting that information and seeing where customers actually have benefited and where there is surplus power that is made available at the most economical rates possible on a wholesale level to for competition. So with that, I'm ready to listen.
Thank you, Senator Sharp. Just some housekeeping items. We have a very tight schedule with significant testimony to be taken today. I would ask that the folks that are going to make presentations limit their presentations to 20 minutes at a very maximum, and if you can keep it shorter than that, that'd be great, because I would like the committee members to withhold their questions unless there is sufficient time in a lot of time period, then I will allow a few questions at that point, but I don't want to go beyond the allotted time or we'll get behind. We're scheduled for a lunch break at 11:55 to 1:15. Then additionally, there'll be an afternoon break between 3:15 and 3:30. And then at 3:30, we will have an hour and a half roundtable discussion where all the presenters will be invited to sit at the table with the committee members to answer their questions and discuss this issue. Additionally, we will have an open public testimony of this committee meeting. This committee will meet on August 18th prior to the Eureka Convention, where the general public will be allowed to testify on this issue starting at 12 p.m. on the 18th of August in this room. Additionally, we have a meeting scheduled in Fairbanks, the 19th of August, something like that. Pardon me? September 16th or 17th. And then another meeting scheduled in November already. So I would ask that the presenters provide the number of already have the written testimony to the committee, so that we made part of our written package, which will be distributed to the other committee members, and particularly those that may not be in attendance. For example, unfortunately, Senator Adams is not able to attend today at a conflict. Representative Osterman will be attending. He has got a board meeting of the Alaska Aerospace Development Corporation this morning. We'll be attending later. I believe Senator Taylor will be here this afternoon because he had also had a conflict. also, on teleconference sites, we have online Juneau, Fairbanks, Kodiak, Kenai, Matsu, and off-net, we have Speaker Phillips's office and Homer on the teleconference line. With that, if we could have our opening testimony from Chugach Electric Association. And there again, I remind you, we have a 20-minute window. Mr. Bjornstad, welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Chairman Rothberg and members of the committee. Chugach appreciates the opportunity to present our views on this issue. I'd like to begin by reading a quote by a Rail Belt Electric Utility Manager on October 21st, 1996. I quote, "One thing is certain, and that is that the customer can't lose as a result of competition," unquote. This was not Chugach speaking, although we believe it is to be true. Another quote is equally enlightening, quote, "The transition to competition holds an enormous challenge and opportunity for electric utilities. Like any new development, change can be profitable if you're positioned to take advantage of it. MLMP is exclamation point. 1996 annual report published last year. You are here to make recommendations on two burning questions: whether to implement electric utility restrictions in Alaska and how to implement it if you decide to let it go. Chugach believes the first question and the answer to it is intuitively obvious. Restructuring implies allowing competition. Competition is the cornerstone of American business. Competition makes for new ideas, better customer service, innovation, efficiency, reduction in costly regulatory oversight, and added values to customers and shareholders. The consequence of elimination or restriction of competition is an important issue of public policy. We all know that one of the most important functions of the legislature is to set the broad policy of the state. It takes nothing away from the important work of regulators and technicians to say that their job is to implement broad policy decisions of the legislature. We will be suggesting today the discussion would be most productive if we kept on a high level of broad policy. The issue for you should not be how to implement competition or restructuring. The legislature sets policy, the APUC implements it. The question is very timely because we have a recent order from our regulators, the PUC, which interprets the policy you, the legislature, has set for them to follow. In your notebook that we provided you under the tab entitled APUC Authority, you can see the comparison of legislation policy guidance and the PUC interpretation of its authority. It is apparent that the PUC understands the legislature intended to displace competition and delegated to the PUC the policy making of when to eliminate or implement competition. I would draw your attention to the last part of what Chugach believes the PUC has interpreted legislative instructions. Delegating to the commission the power to determine when to eliminate or implement competition in the public interest. As I think everybody knows, Chugach's view is different on that. We think the legislature spoke out in the statutes and said two or more utilities who are competing to furnish identical electric utility service, and that competition is not in the public interest, the commission should take appropriate action to eliminate the competition. It's an entirely different statement. I want to be very clear. We are not here to re-argue the issue with the PUC or take them to task. We appreciate that we have a legitimate disagreement with them, and we recognize they are performing their jobs in the true spirit of public service. We also appreciate that they have made their decision in advance of this hearing so that we know where they stand on the issue. Nevertheless, in the light of the APUC's view that the legislature intended to preclude competition except in unusual circumstances, the issue is ripe for public policy decision, first by this joint committee and next winter by the legislature. Here is the circumstance we're in right now. The current status quo is that restructuring or competition is not allowed. Unless policymakers step up to the issue, customers cannot choose from now until that status quo is changed. Customers cannot receive the benefits of choice. We believe it's simple. First, I want to impress upon you that your work here can be simple. What the customers need is primarily a broad policy statement that competition is allowed as a general rule. The message needs to be clear. Suppliers don't have to get special permission unless they want to be exempted from competition. We think that's what the law says, but we believe the legislature needs to clarify it. If you do that, if you're willing to go that far, we think you will have satisfied the charge of House Concurrent Resolution 34. Second, even though you don't need to get into the detailed implementation, the actual implementation of customer choice could be pretty simple. Here's how it works. A customer in Chugach's or MLMP's distribution service territory asks for service from another supplier. The supplier pays a fair rate set by the PUC for access over the other system. If it's a large customer, equipment is installed, which communicates with the supplier's computers and generators to follow the load. If it's a small customer, the supplier uses load research data, determines an estimate of the customer's usage, and operates its generators to match the load. At the end of the month, the differences are trued up, if any. This is what we've been doing for over a decade since MLMP and Chugach systems were interconnected. It is that simple. Third, Choice by consumers for goods and services from suppliers happens every minute of the day. It is not complex. You know it, your constituents know it, and all the utilities represented in this room know it. But you will hear that allowing competition in the electric utility industry is going to be very difficult and complex. I dare say you will hear the words to that effect again today. Confusion and complexity equal delay, and delay is the prime objective. The strategy of the opponents of competition is achieving delay. Delay is fully effective at preventing customer choice as a policy statement by the legislature to prevent competition. Those who would proclaim the sky will fall in if the customers are allowed to choose will raise many questions and make it seem as complex as possible. By the end of the day, you can expect to see a long list of questions and concerns. Is competition really a good idea in Alaska? The starting point for this discussion must be with basic human behavior. The argument over whether competitive or the collective model is the better way of organizing productive enterprises must be classed as one of the greatest debates of our century. History shows the outcome. Western competitive capitalism, 1. Soviet collectivism, 0. Competition works because it's more in sync with the way humans behave. Competition encourages efficient behavior in business enterprises. So the burden of proof on this one ought to be on those who want to prevent competition to prove why it cannot work here and why the forces of the state government ought to continue to be used to prevent it. We think the opponents of competition have a tough row to hoe because competition is already working here. Let's talk about competition. Here are some examples. 1994, MLMP offers lower rates to MEA. Here's the headline from the Alaska Star. MLMP offers lower rates to MEA. In 1994, MLMP offers Economy Energy Fairbanks. In 1995, MLMP attempts to get Copper Valley in a joint venture. In 1996, MLMP attempts to get Seward as a customer. In 1997, MLMP signs a contract to sell energy to Golden Valley. A review of the competition to Fairbanks will show benefits enjoyed by the customers in Fairbanks, as well as the millions of dollars of rate reductions that have been passed on to South Central customers resulting from the additional revenues from sales to Fairbanks. Now, the opponents of competition will tell you with great confidence, maybe even today, that you can't have competition that works where there's only one buyer and two sellers. But that is the situation, two sellers and one buyer. It's exactly the situation which has brought millions of dollars in savings to the rail belt for over a decade. It kind of reminds me of the joke of the economist who wouldn't pick up a $5 bill on the sidewalk, offering the explanation with a great deal of confidence, I might add, that if the $5 bill were real, someone would have already picked it up. Look at all their efforts that fear of competition has brought. MEA, again, recently cut prices to its customers. In fact, the MEA bill this month proudly announces their small commercial rates are lower than Chugach's. MLMP in 1997, in their annual report, proudly announced their rates are lower than Chugach's. Golden Valley's message to its customers at their annual meeting, quote, our rates are competitive. Chugach in 1997 did not pass on to its customers, both wholesale and retail, $3.5 million in fuel surcharge because of competition. Copper Valley Electric proudly announces a joint project with one of its major customers to jointly develop a cogeneration project. Ask yourselves, did these events just happen? Homer and Madden and MLMP are attempting to sign up customers with special contract considerations. Aurora Power is signing five-year contracts promising to represent an electrical customer as a power pool administrator and charge 20% of the customer's monthly savings as a fee. These are just examples of what happens when businesses try to satisfy their customers. So the question is really not properly stated. Will it work? Because it's already working. There's every reason to believe that it will work even better when policymakers actually allow it. Customer choice is the key to competition. Customer choice is the key to why competition works. It is not that it just what happens when there's competition. It is the key to why it works. It works because the customer chooses, not the legislature, not the regulators, not the municipal assembly, and not the utility managers or the board directors make it happen. Competition works because you let the customer choose. You let the customer make all the choices they're used to making when they decide to buy something. They get to decide when, from whom, how much they buy, and how much they're going to pay. The blessings of competition flow from the system of incentives and how they operate to get people to do what you want, provide good value to the customers. It is because you let them choose that it works. It is the reason it works, just not because of a pleasant consequence. It follows then that the flip side of this, the more you or the regulators make choices for the customer, the less choice you leave them, and the less they will benefit. In your books, we've provided a copy of the Brookings Institution, and it says the same thing. That's why it's so important to let the customers choose and not get carried away trying to create some elaborate, perfect structures where all the, quote, various stakeholders get something. And that's why we wince when people, even the well-meaning people, talk about, quote, leveling the playing field. What criteria does one use to level the playing field? Because one person's leveling is another person's unfair tilting. Leave that to the customers, and we'll all be better off. This is why less is more. When you choose a system where the parties compete to please the customers, customers win because the customer gets to choose. The winner is the one the customer decides to buy from. If you keep more of the decision-making with the regulators or the legislators, then the utilities will be directing at winning your approval. The customer's interest will take a backseat to winning regulatory or legislative approval for each entity's favorite scheme. It will work better if you leave more choice with the customer. The more you try to build the perfect system of checks and balances in the marketplace to protect this or that interest group, the less customers will benefit. We would like to offer a policymaker's guide to listening towards simplicity. To help you listen through the testimony today, we offer the following suggested questions to apply to what you hear. Is this really a high-level policy issue, or is it something best left to the legislators or the regulators and technical people once the legislature has clearly articulated a policy favoring competition in retail electric sales? If people with the right expertise had a genuine desire to solve the problem and got together to solve it, would it really be a problem? Is there a solution to this problem, a question that does not require a long, long delay? And finally, keep a tally of the number of times the opponents of customer choice use words like complex. In conclusion, I'd like to reflect on the situation. There's an old joke that we've heard. How many therapists does it take to change a light bulb? The answer, only one, but the light bulb wants to have to change. We have a whole industry that definitely does not want to change, and we've heard from them for years now, and you'll hear more in a minute, all the different reasons why we have to go slow, why it's scary, and what won't work. The problem is we got a lot of bright lights in these utilities, but not one of them wants to change. They're all using their considerable talents to prevent and slow competition. Wouldn't it be great if we began to use these considerable talents to figure out ways to make it happen instead of ways to slow it down or stop it? With a very simple, broad policy announcement in favor of competition, you can change the focus of the industry from why we can't do it to how we can do it. All these smart, hardworking people can redirect their considerable talents from slowing down to making it happen. We think Anchorage customers should be able to choose their electric service providers. More importantly, they don't think they need the government to choose for them. We would urge you to clearly reestablish the policy of this state that competition is the rule and only authorizations to monopolize require special authorization of the PUC. By the way, the quote that I started out with in the beginning, one thing is certain, and that is the customers can't lose as a result of competition, was in an interview with the Alaska Star Paper by the general manager of Matanuska Electric. I'd like to end with one last quote. MLMP is not opposed to competition, but if it is to come, It must be carefully orchestrated by regulators and the legislature and must be crafted so no electric customers are harmed in the process. That was the general manager of MLMP just a couple weeks ago. Shugach believes unless the regulators and legislators have the genius of Mozart in orchestrating a sheet of music for a perfect symphony, it's better to start practicing competition right now. Thank you for the opportunity to present these views.
Thank you, Mr. Bjornstedt, and thank you for the relative brevity of your remarks. If you could please make sure you provide a written comment to Ms. Seitz, the committee aide, it would be helpful. And because we have a couple of minutes, is there any questions in the committee at this time? Representative Senator Lehman, please.
Mr. Bjornstedt, would it have been helpful for the legislature to pass, at least for the Anchorage area, I guess what I call a pilot study or program to look at competition in a unique area of Anchorage, maybe that includes a number of different types of customers? You know, we looked at that this year, and I guess the legislature didn't want to get into it because it's maybe too complex and too burdensome for this session. But in your opinion, would that have been a helpful exercise, or you think you know the answer?
We think that the pilot program that we proposed for the Anchorage and municipal customers, the Chugach retail customers, would have benefited from a pilot program like that. You have another presenter today is going to talk about a smaller pilot program. We've got a lot of problems with that because we don't think it's going to be a make for competition. But, yes, we would think the legislature would have adopted a program similar to what we proposed. We think it would have furthered the process.
Further questions? Representative Dyson.
Thank you. Gene and other presenters today, I'd be interested in your expert opinion on what changes in technology are going to mean in the industry, and particularly for us in Alaska in the next decade or 20 years.
And try to answer that now or answer later?
Maybe, or we can maybe get it in the question and answer period this afternoon.
Okay, sure.
If I could just underline that point, I think one of the major concerns of everybody in your industry is the development of new technology and standalone generation as the primary driving force behind the need to look at this issue. Would that be a fair statement?
Sure.
President David, do you have a question?
I think a couple of questions that when you talk about having two sellers, one of the concerns we have with a relatively small market is what constitutes competition. So can you talk a little bit more about how, in that kind of a market situation, we prevent monopoly and a competitive price leadership, that kind of thing? And then a second question I have is the question of reliability. We're particularly concerned north of the range. We're a long distance from the Anchorage area, so there's some questions about that. Could you like to...
Sure. Let me answer the second question first. We've also, in the handout I'll give you from the presentation just made, we addressed the question about reliability. We think the reliability north of the range has been superior. In fact, the annual report that Golden Valley puts out said reliability is 99.999%. So we don't think reliability is a problem. I think we think it's a red herring. First question on competition, we think that Fairbanks has benefited from the attempts by MLMP and Chugach to serve that load up there. And that's a situation we think with two sellers and one buyer. No reason why that can't operate in the Anchorage area. The Bush communities, we realize, are a different situation, and we're not proposing that they maybe have something different to be concerned about. But we think their concern should be about co-generators and independent power producers.
I'd like to move on if we could right now. There we go. Perfect time. Thank you, Mr. Bjornstedt.
Thank you, sir.
Next, we'd like to hear from Mr. Eric Ewell of Eureka.
We have to put up the...
Okay. Talk to Mr. Lozano.
Go ahead.
Take a brief recess. Mr. Yule, for the record, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, co-chairmen, committee members, my name is Eric Yule.
Speak up for the recorder, too, so.
Yes, my name is Eric Yule. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Rural Electric Cooperative Association. My association represents virtually all of the major players in the electric utility industry in the state of Alaska. Members of my trade association, which also includes Chugach, MLMP, and even the smaller guys, probably generates about 95% of the electricity in the state of Alaska. I'd like to break the ice a little bit by saying you're dealing with a very complex issue.
Is it confusing?
I hope not.
Is that a power outage?
Actually, if you don't want to turn the lights out, that's fine. I very much appreciate the opportunity to meet with you today. I can tell you that Arica very much supported this resolution. Frankly, we would like to have seen a longer time period for you all to be able to deliberate, fully understand the issue, and come to a resolution. However, we very much, despite the short time frame originally quoted in the resolution, strongly supported that resolution. Mr. Chairman, the topics that I'd like to address today, and these were somewhat requested by Representative Hochberg, trying to get everybody somewhat on equal playing field, since I represent the sort of the utility industry throughout the state rather than just the rail belt. I'd like to look at state and federal activity in the area of deregulation, the electric utility industry throughout the state of Alaska rather than just the rail belt, important issues for the state to consider, basically you all to consider, finally standards for the state of Alaska, and then summary. And for starters, we're going to be discussing an issue that has a number of monikers associated with it. We all call it generally deregulation. It's also known as re-regulation, retail wheeling, restructuring, customer choice, retail competition, unbundling. But the bottom line is, I don't think you can truly call it deregulation. Mr. Bjornstad indicated that it was going to be a relatively simple process, but as a matter of fact, in reviewing the situation within the Alaska Public Utilities Commission, the entity that regulates not only the electric utilities industry, but all of the utilities throughout the state, when the telephone industry was deregulated roughly a year and a half ago, you can see that APUC's caseload virtually doubled overnight. And I'd be willing to bet that representatives from APUC would indicate that the caseload is probably even higher than this yet. Consequently, I would not call this deregulation. If anything, it's going to be re-regulation, but as a minimum, we'll probably call it ourselves restructuring. What has been the impetus for deregulation? I think primarily efforts that have been taken on a national level to deregulate the gas pipeline industry, telecommunications, the airline industry, and in many respects, and perhaps in all respects, perhaps deregulation was good. I wouldn't argue against that. I will say that a lot of people try and compare the electric utility deregulation to telecommunications. I'd have to say that keep in mind we are a hardwire industry. Haven't figured out how yet to get away from transmission lines. Not only that, but we're a very capital-intensive industry. We have a lot of generation that costs hundreds of millions of dollars and are not going to be easily replaced by new technology. That's not to say that deregulation won't bring new technology, because it will, and we all welcome that, and we're all looking for it. I think we're going to see fuel cells in everybody's houses in the future. But in the meantime, it's not something that we're going to see quantum leaps forward, similar to what perhaps we've seen in the telecommunications industry. In terms of the federal government, the reason we're all here today is because the federal government has the responsibility to basically set the policy. And they've been trying to do this on in the area of utility restructuring for the last 5 years. And this is a series of bills that have gone through the legislature or through Congress. And as Representative Roepberg mentioned earlier, the issue is once again moot for this year, and very possibly next year as well, at least according to Senator Murkowski. I have a letter here from Tom Bliley, chairman of the Commerce Committee, basically throwing up his hands at this point in time. And you're welcome to have a copy of that. Be that as it may, despite the fact that the federal government has not initiated restructuring, a number of the states, under the advice of their own congressional council, have initiated some form of restructuring. And as a matter of fact, you'll find that some 14 states have already passed laws that will allow restructuring in their states, and it's hoped that when the federal legislation comes along that they'll be able to fold their state legislation under the federal legislation. Six states, rather than wrestle with the issue, have just basically drop-kicked the issue over to their local public utilities commission and requested that they issue orders. Some 26 states, including the state of Alaska, have initiated comprehensive assessments of the restructuring issue. And I can tell you that many of these states have been studying the issue for a heck of a lot longer than we have. Nevertheless, that's not to say that it's an issue that has not come before the legislature to date. For instance, 2 years ago, Senate Bill 54, in many respects, was an anti-deregulation piece of legislation that came before you. Basically, it tried to protect service territories and make them sacred. Passed the Senate, did not pass the House. The following year, there was a very cautious approach taken by the electric utility industry that said, yes, we will allow through the legislature restructuring. However, there's got to be a very high standard before it's just totally opened up to everybody. And basically, it said, we don't want to see anybody get hurt. There was this bill that was actually adopted or put in by Representative Osterman to allow deregulation in the Anchorage area. This one, of course, is the one that set up this committee. This one would have allowed, once again, deregulation competition in the Anchorage area. And then finally, the APUC itself has initiated a document to study deregulation. And they did this about 6 or 7 months ago, and you'll probably hear more of their efforts before the day is over as well.
We'll forgive you your editorial comment.
I appreciate that, because I'll probably make a lot of editorial comments as we go along. Looking at the lower 48, this just gives you a feel for the cost of power. What I'd like to do is discuss Alaska a little bit and what we look like. It shows the cost of power in cents per kilowatt hour. An interesting thing about the lower 48 is the high-cost states, which are the ones in red, are the very states that have passed state laws having to do with restructuring. So you'll find that the states that already have low-cost power, they're really not looking for deregulation or restructuring. It's the states that have high-cost power, including Illinois, that have really taken the initiative to pass some form of deregulation. Throughout the United States, you have 119,000 miles of transmission line, and you have 4.7 million miles of distribution line. I just get a kick out of the way the state of Alaska is portrayed in relation to the rest of the United States. Generally, it's about the size of Hawaii off the coast of Southern California. So I generally try and put up a slide that shows the true size of the state of Alaska as it relates to the United States. Our transmission line goes from the middle of Iowa down to Missouri, and that's basically it. Throughout the rest of the state, we have a whole bunch of satellite electric utility systems. That's it. Each individual community has its own little electric utility. Matter of fact, you'll find that we have more electric utilities in the state of Alaska than any other state or all five states in the Pacific Northwest combined. That's because we're not interconnected. And if we're not interconnected, you can imagine that in each village, there's very little choice, there's very little opportunity, and there's certainly no opportunity to move power around. Looking at the state of Alaska as compared to the national average, cost of electricity in Alaska, or on the national average, residential is 8.4, for all classes 7.6. What that basically means is that small industrial is getting a break, as they should. It doesn't cost as much to take care of small industrial or large industrial as it does to run distribution line to residential. And looking at the state of Alaska, that's also the case. Residential is a bit higher than for all classes. Looking specifically at the rail belt, just to give you a feel for the cost of power, the three primary generators of electricity in the rail belt in 1995 had rates as shown here. And once again, you'll see that, frankly, they aren't too far out of line with each other. One of the reasons they're not too far out of line is because CEA itself, as Gene mentioned, wholesales power to the other utilities in the rail belt. And Golden Valley, as a result, has been a main recipient of that electricity. But this is on the wholesale level. We're talking retail today, and there's a big distinction there. Don't get that confused. Throughout rural Alaska, the cost of electricity is roughly four times that what it is in the rail belt area, greater than 40 cents a kilowatt hour. Nobody in the lower 48 has cost of power that high. Looking specifically at the rail belt, I think everybody is aware that the prime transmission system goes from Fairbanks down to Anchorage, and then there's a, I believe, 115 line that goes down to the Kenai. We're in the process of trying to upgrade the northern transmission line that will allow more power to be moved there, and we're also looking at a transmission line that goes from Anchorage down to Kenai to get more power both on and off the Kenai. Copper Valley Electric Association has its own transmission line, but basically it's a single utility system. And then, as I mentioned earlier, and it's an important point to keep in mind, especially when considering competition, is the issue of who produces power, at least in the rail belt, where does it go? Chugach Electric is the big dog. There's no two ways about that. Not only do they provide their own generation, but they provide most of the power to Seward, most of the power to MEA, Matanuska Electric, most of the power to Healy, as well as a substantial share of Golden Valley Electric's power as well.
Is it Homer, not Healy?
I'm sorry, Homer. You're right. Sorry about that. Municipal Light and Power, of course, self-generates, and they have, and I'll be stand to be corrected, but they have very little retail or wholesale sales out of their system. Golden Valley Electric, on the other hand, is a recipient of power from CEA. So here's CEA, who's providing 60% of the wholesale power or more throughout the rail belt area, and yet they're saying it's already an equal playing field. We ain't got no problem. Kind of a poor little graph, but basically the average consumer in the United States consumes about 822 kilowatt hours per month. We do the same thing in the state of Alaska, at least in the rail belt, I should say. When you multiply that times our average rate, it shows that our average bill in urban Alaska, the rail belt, is slightly less than $100. In rural Alaska, where it's 40 cents a kilowatt hour, their average bill would be over $300 a month. In fact, however, they do not consume that much electricity. Price elasticity does take place. They only consume about 320 hours per month. And not only that, but the state also administers a power cost equalization program that reduces the cost of power to them. So they don't have to pay as much as what you're seeing here, but it is still a substantial amount, and yet they have less disposable income in rural Alaska to be able to pay for it. Once again, I indicated that we have more utilities in the state of Alaska than any other state. We're an uninterconnected state. This merely shows that virtually every village that's out there has its own little utility. How are we different in the state of Alaska? In the lower 48, the preponderance of generation comes from investor-owned utilities. And these are the guys, of course, that are trying to increase their bottom line. Granted, the ultimate objective is to get cheap power to consumers, but I'll tell you that the IOUs are the ones that are primarily pushing for it because they see the opportunity to make some money, and that's fine. The rural electric cooperatives in the lower 48 represent only 5% of the total generation as compared to the investor-owned utilities. But interestingly enough, if you look at this 5%, you'll find that there was no interest by the IOUs, the investor-owned utilities, to serve rural America. And as a result, 44% of the actual distribution miles in the lower 48 comes from that 5% generator, the rural electric utilities, and the IOUs only have to provide 51%, and that of that 4.7 million miles. The same thing happened in the state of Alaska. Because it wasn't economic for the free enterprise system to come up here and make a buck, what we found is that we have the various geographic locations had to develop serve some almost 70%, munis 22%, and the investor-owned utilities, very small amount. I would suggest that if these figures were reversed, there may be a totally different attitude toward deregulation in the state of Alaska. But as a matter of fact, we are a consumer-owned state, and our primary thrust is to keep power low to our consumers rather than maximize profits for the bottom line. This merely shows that the preponderance of generation in the rail belt today is coal-fired or is natural gas. In rural Alaska, it's primarily diesel. And then we all share a little bit in hydro, and of course we have a certain amount of coal-fired generation up in the Fairbanks area. I'd like to sort of move into one of the issues that you're going to have before you. Representative Roepberg mentioned cherry picking. This shows the average cost of producing a kilowatt hour at one of the villages, or let's say in the Alaska Village Electric Cooperative System. This is the average of 51 villages in rural Alaska. And what you find is that the fuel component of that kilowatt hour represents only about 31% of the total cost. All these elements here are fixed costs. Where does that power go? It goes to residential, small commercial, other public, and schools. In each village, you'll find generally one school. If a alternative power provider came in and stole this school, that utility would lose 20% of its entire revenue. And yet all of these fixed costs here would still have to be paid, which really means that the fuel savings would represent only about 6%. They lose 20% of their revenue, but they only cut 6% of their total costs. And you're going to find that that's going to be a problem in the whole issue of cherry picking, not just for rural Alaska, but in a smaller sense in the urban areas as well. General information slide, nothing more than that. The cost of electricity in the AVEX system going from 1978 to present, more than 20 years, has remained somewhat constant. And consequently, in real terms, it's actually gone down. And I just show that because this, during the period of time when we've had power cost equalization, a period of time when people felt that perhaps the utilities weren't being efficiently prudent in their use of the electricity that they have. Now, looking at the deregulation issues that we're primarily concerned with in the Rail Belt area, I would like to say that the electric utility managers of Eureka have had the opportunity to get together, discuss some of the problems that we see. They are complex. One of the main ones that we're concerned about is monopolization. We already have one utility that's the big dog. If that big dog can pick up the other utility in the Anchorage area, there's essentially a monopoly. That one utility is still a co-op. Their best interests are to return as much profit to consumers as possible. But now all of a sudden, they've captured the market up here, and they're much more susceptible to the Enrons or the PG&Es of the world that perhaps would like to come to Alaska. And then what you would have would be a large investor owned in a regulated monopoly. And I think that that is something that we're quite concerned about. Cherry picking, I've mentioned to you, stranded costs, virtually all of the generation that has been put in place today was financed under a set of rules that are in place today. If you change the rules, then some accommodation needs to be made for how the utilities can still pay off their debt. And in particular, I think the concern is for municipal light and power. Obligation to serve. Right now, the utilities have a certificated service territory. If you deregulate it and say anybody can come in there, how then can you look to that utility and say, but you have an obligation to serve no matter what, and you can't shed the pits of the organization. You have to serve everybody. Universal service, it's almost a peripheral issue within the telecommunications industry. Accommodation was made for keeping the cost of power low in rural Alaska. This is something that you're going to have to wrestle with. Reliability. Gene says not a problem. I can tell you that it is a problem. It has manifested itself recently in the lower 48. When the heat wave took place down there, normally retailers that buy power from wholesalers would buy power at about 50 cents per megawatt hour. In order to fulfill their contractual obligations, they found that they were getting gouged by wholesalers for $7,000 per megawatt hour, as reported in USA Today. A similar article that you'll find quite good was recently written, Washington Post, Tuesday, July 28th, very recent, also discusses some of the price gouging that took place. If MEA, who happens to be a customer of Chugach, loses power because Chugach has a hiccup, is Golden Valley going to charge $7,000 per megawatt hour? I don't know. They certainly have the right to in a full open competition. Tax-exempt status of utilities. Once again, this is something that's a concern to MLNP. If they start losing customers, they're going to have to look north, perhaps, to recoup customers that they're losing, let's say, to Chugach. They're outside of the two-county area. Are their bonds still tax-exempt bonds? Would they lose their tax-exempt status? I can't answer that, but I can sure tell you that it's a major concern in the lower 48. Mr. Chairman,
what are you doing here? Are you about done?
I'm about done here. Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to suggest that in your deliberations, you make every effort to establish principles by which you then come up with legislation. For instance, the National Association of Regulatory Commissioners, the same group that APUC is a member of, has come up with a set of standards that should guide the debate and the ultimate legislation that comes up with. For instance, assign states the responsibility to determine for themselves what needs to be done. Maintain universal service at reasonable rates as well as the safety, reliability, and quality, so forth and so on. A similar position was put in place by NRECA. I won't show that to you. It's in your book there. And finally, the electric utility managers themselves in the state of Alaska looked at what we feel is important for you to be looking at. I can tell you that this was not universally accepted, as you can imagine, but it says recognize the unique features of the Alaska system. We do need uniform standards for all energy providers. In other words, everybody's got to play by the same rules. Maintain exclusive distribution service areas. That's at the distribution level, not the generation level. What is the role of the supplier of last resort, and how is that defined? These are issues that we feel that you must address in order to put together a prudent policy for the state of Alaska. Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. In conclusion, we'd like to say adopt these uniform standards or standards that you all could agree with before you try and pass legislation. Look at protecting all consumers. I think that you'll find that that's going to be very difficult to do. Strongly consider no restructuring for rural Alaska utilities. There is virtually nothing out there that an economist is going to tell you is going to work, in my opinion. We would strongly recommend that you conduct a third-party economic assessment aimed at creating a template for restructuring the industry, and then be objective enough to, if you conclude that it's not right for the state of Alaska today, and it could very well be that it's not right today, don't be afraid to say that it's not right. As trade association manager, sometimes this is the way I see life. I know that the salesperson should probably be wearing a skirt, but then we don't have capital punishment in the state of Alaska either. Mr. Chairman, I mentioned or I suggested that the legislature may want to implement its own third-party assessment. Mary, do we have a copy of that proposed RFP? Can we have the lights, please?
Yes, please. Yeah. 30 seconds.
This is an RFP that the electric utility industry itself was going to fund and have created. It would result in a third-party arms-length economic assessment of the state of Alaska and try and conclude what the risks of deregulation would be, what the benefits would be, and how we may proceed forward to achieve those benefits. We would strongly suggest that you would consider funding this. We wanted to fund it, but I must say that the time was so short that we felt that we couldn't do it in a timely fashion. You may want to consider it for yourselves. It's an RFP that we put together with the Senator
Lehman.
Chairman, on this RFP, Eric, do you have any idea of a range of dollars to do an adequate job for this type of professional work?
We discussed that internally, and it can go anywhere from $50,000 to $150,000.
That's about what I was.
Representative Dyson, please.
Thank you. Your organization is really almost a professional association of the power suppliers in the state, correct?
That's correct.
And you, this is a kindly question, really don't have a mission or a charter to be an advocate for power consumers, per se, do you?
Actually, we do, and as a matter of fact, as part of our mission statement, our ultimate objective is to ensure the lowest cost power for consumers. That's what we're all striving for. That is the individual objective. Utilities as well, and they haven't imparted that on me. But we're not
after. Yeah, but where does your funding come from?
From the utilities themselves.
So if the best interest of the consumer would be that a whole bunch of your members got combined and died and went away, you kind of have a conflict of interest there.
Well, maybe I should say I have a contract.
Yeah. But if the interests of the consumers happen to be different than the interests of your members, you're kind of caught in a crossfire.
I guess I would disagree, because the members are all consumer-owned utilities anyway. And if the consumers decided, for instance, that MEA should go away and should consolidate with a PG&E or Chugach Electric, then they can so decide to do so. And there is a, you know, a bylaws process for virtually all the utilities in the state of Alaska. And throughout the rail belt, we are all either consumer-owned utilities. We are owned as either cooperatives or municipalities.
Thank you very much. Brief recess while we detect. The commissions, gentlemen, for the record, please.
My name is Dwight Ornquist, commissioner over at the APUC. I have with me today Mr. Bob Moore, who is our executive director.
Thank you very much, and please continue with your testimony, Mr. Ornquist and Ms. Lohr.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Ornquist, for the record. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. and representatives and senators. This is sort of a bit off the cuff, but it's not something that's brand new. The APUC has been looking at the electric industry. We've looked at the telecommunications industry. We've looked at the refuse industry. Asked ourselves what competition could be used for and if it would be effective. One of the things that we've come up with is that competition is not necessarily our goal. Not our goal to have competition. Our goal is different. It's to provide good services, to make sure the prices are low and the efficiencies are high for the customers of Alaska. What competition is one of the tools. We have regulation, we have competition. Regulation is an effort to attain efficiency, and competition is efficiency happening all by itself. It's a self-motivating factor for companies. Historically, the APUC has needed a bit of a prod to get us moving in the direction of competition. We look back at the long-distance companies. We had some prompting by the state legislature. We look now at the local exchange companies, both telecommunications areas, and we've had prodding from the federal end. To date, the same concerns that have come up here with electricity have come up prior to this in both of those areas. That is, the prices will go up for individual customers, but businesses will go down. There will be cherry picking, and what we've seen is that, especially in the telecommunications area, the prices have gone down for all customers. One of the things that lent a hand in that, of course, is when these companies were motivated by competition, research and development went wild. New technologies came out, implemented quickly, and benefits for the customers were noticed immediately. The prices have gone down in for all customers in those areas. We view using competition as not a panacea. We view regulating as not a panacea. There are problems that have to be watched for both. There are cases where regulation makes sense, or having a monopoly provider. Maybe that's a better way to put it. But when you have a monopoly, you have to have something that takes care of the customers, and that in turn becomes us, the regulators. We look at roads would be a good example. Regulation and the state watching over the roads seems to work well. We don't want duplicate roads going from Anchorage to the valley or down to Homer. That doesn't make sense. On the other hand, we don't have state trucks hauling stuff back and forth or making things to be hauled on the roads. competition works very well in that arena. The same could be said for the electric industry in theory. Now, we have roads, which would be the infrastructure, the transmission lines, the distribution lines, the substations, transformers. Those are items that you would not necessarily want to have duplicated, an area where monopoly seems to make some sense. On the other hand, the generation and buying and selling of power doesn't lend itself to monopoly provision nearly as much, and it does open up the area where competition may be useful. Right now, we've got a docket that's open on electric industry restructuring, and we've gotten so far, I'm the docket manager on that, and I've gotten so far as to make contact with a number of utilities, trying to establish a good plan for moving forward with it. And internally, this is actually supports both of the speakers today that we've had so far. Internally, we've come up with a plan to do a third-party study, strangely enough, that we would plan on funding at the APUC. The one thing that I'm not prepared to give is, at this point, is how long it would take, and I've been informed by our executive director that the selection process could take between 90 and 120 days, unless there's some way that we can use the same process that we use for obtaining expert witnesses. And if there's a way that we can do that, then we can get a company in here much quicker. And it would be a third party, arm's length, no vested interest. The study would be specific to Alaska, using the experience that has been garnered so far down in the 148. Some of the things that would do would be we could establish what the requirements are for Alaska. We could establish what the structure is and what type of competition wouldn't work, where it wouldn't work. We have approximately three different types of areas. We've got the rail belt, which has transmission lines. We've got pretty good size utilities, say Copper Valley type of utility, but it's an isolated entity. It has a bit of its own transmission internally. And then we've got bush structures, which are a whole different ballgame, total isolated little points of generation and consumption in an area. A study could take all that and figure out where things would work and wouldn't work. Also, we do have a lot of co-ops. That was brought up today. And consumer-owned utilities, municipals, co-ops. That has pluses and minuses. It offers us some challenges that are unique, but it also offers us some advantages and some opportunities that are unique to Alaska. So that's one step, is a study. The second step that we've sort of leaning toward now is to have a symposium of sorts where we would have legislative, regulatory, and industry officials and participants bring up the experts in the field, so to speak, that have seen what's gone on so far, not with an eye toward pro-competition or anti-competition, but more both, so that we could get all the information in here and balance it out and see how it applies to Alaska. And instead of having us reacting out of fear or out of exuberance only, it would allow us to weigh the pros and cons, the pluses and minuses. It would allow us to identify the issues and make a plan. And then once that plan is made, we could begin implementing it. I think that there may be changes that are required on the legislative level, changing statutes. I think changes would be made on the regulatory level there to address the issues that have been brought up, some of them here today. And in doing so, the APUC, we view ourselves as, number one, we're a creature of the legislature. You give us direction in our statute. We do our very best to implement that direction. And we want to be a tool for the legislature, a resource that if you have questions or concerns or want things done, we don't have a bias. Our bias is to make sure that the legislature's direction that has been established is the direction we're moving. I guess with that, I would open it up for questions.
Any questions for you, Senator Lehman?
Thank you, Chairman Roeckberg. Commissioner Hornquist, and perhaps this one should be answered by Mr. Lord, because I believe he was on the other end of this dialogue, and I don't think you were in a finance committee subcommittee hearing this year. Chairman Cotton and I engaged in conversation about the issues of competition and your commission's status and the work on it, and at the time, and I'm hesitant to put words in his mouth, especially based on my memory, which is somewhat faulty, but several months later, and I have not gone back and reviewed notes, but he said something to the effect that we believe the commission has the authority now to deal with the issues of competition. And I said, well, then why is it taking so long? He said, you know, he talked about the backlog and, you know, just the workload, those things. But when he said that, then I read what, you know, Chugach gave us, which I assume you have, you know, the legislative policy guidelines and recent interpretation of that. It seems like that is different from what the chairman told us last April. If it is different, could you explain why? What has changed in that time? Or am I just misreading what your ruling, recent ruling says?
I'd be glad to address that. If I missed something on the meeting that came up in the meeting in finance, let me know. It's sort of we don't agree. Is what it boils down to. I think when the PUC looks at the statute, we feel that the legislature has given us authority to use competition where we can apply it and where it would make sense. When the question is why aren't we implementing competition, say, in the electric industry, we are examining it and attempting to move forward, but just as you'll find with the and this now becomes my opinion, it's not the APUC official statement, but if you look at what happened with the telecommunications industry, the APUC is an entity, it's a bureaucracy that's been created by the legislature, and changing those things takes a lot of time. The way we do things takes a lot of effort to change, and we work on that. We don't feel like there's clear direction in the statute that says use competition wherever you can. And so the change is not something that's urgent to us. It is more something that that we're looking at now and saying there might be some good uses for competition in Alaska. Let's dig into it. If there was an urgency, I imagine we would be digging much faster. But right now, the stage that we've gotten to is we feel that we do have the authority to use implement competition, but not necessarily the directive to do so. And I think the position that you heard earlier from CEA would be that competition should be the default, and then regulation would be implemented where it was needed. And that's not how we read the statute at this point.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just going to get some follow-up. When we were dealing with your agency's budget, it seemed to me that the chairman was very cooperative with at least my questioning and perhaps, you know, the thoughts of other legislators who were present or were dealing with the issue. And now it sounds like, well, we're, you know, you haven't given us clear direction. And I thought our communication was very direct, very clear. And Sam and I served together, and you know, I have great respect for his talents. And I think he's, you know, he was being honest with me. And I know you're not Commissioner Cotton, and you're speaking for yourself, and I haven't had a chance to get into a detailed discussion with him on it, but I will. Thanks for your response.
If I could respond briefly to...
Mr. Commissioner, go ahead.
Okay. Speaking from my personal perspective again, I sort of am viewed as a pro-competitive person, and... The impression that I'm giving you might be tainted by that a bit. I would like to see us move forward faster, but we have to do things as a group, and we are in fact attempting to move faster.
I'll make a quick comment, and then I'll go to Representative Dyson. I'm glad Senator Lehman brought that up, because I also share his concerns about what I understood to be the chairman's articulation of the policy of the APUC as to their interpretation of the statute. And so this docket that was issued recently by your commission, I think, is somewhat at odds with an attorney general's opinion and the interpretation that I thought the APUC was viewing their ability under our existing statutory regime in terms of granting competition. It seems from this statement, if this is accurate, that you believe as a commission you have the right to grant competition, but also to eliminate it if it's in the public interest. So it seems as if you do have you believe, from my interpretation is correct, that you have the right to grant a competitive position, but also to eliminate it. I share Senator Lehman's concern about this issue, because it seems to be somewhat of an internal policy swing within the commission. Then we'll go to Senator Representative Dyson. No promotion.
Thank you. I have three questions, but I think first you can almost answer with a monosyllabic response. Should we be considering transmission lines and maybe distribution almost as a common carrier, where all the users of those transmission lines would pay the same cost, including the owners of the line?
My answer would be yes, but
thank you.
Okay.
Secondly, my perception is that APUC is buried with work on the telephone stuff, and you guys don't have the resources, human resources, to give this particular effort the kind of attention that it need to do anything rapidly. Am I right or wrong?
My answer would be yes to that, too.
Thank you. Why hasn't the APUC, in interest of serving the consumers, worked to force the generators of electricity here in the South Central into economic dispatch, power pooling, you know, and so on, in order to reduce generation costs?
This one's not monosyllabic, is it?
No.
Good.
You have liberty on that one.
Thank you. We haven't yet. What we have done is we've begun a study, and it's running a little bit behind, but it should be prepared and wrapped up shortly, I would imagine, in a couple of months, 2-3 months. And that study specifically addressed the question that you're asking, which is economic dispatch, power pooling, and a company called Black & Veatch is doing the study. It's an engineering firm, not an economic firm, to do the analysis of what could be accomplished if we did have economic dispatch and power pooling.
I just may follow up then. Do you have the statutory power to force that?
I'm not sure right offhand. My first reaction would be, I think so, but without consulting with our...
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Good question. We'd like to go on. Thank you very much, Commissioner Rehnquist and Mr. Flore. One question, I guess, comes to mind. On this study, is there, this would be directed to Mr. Lord, do you think you have sufficient funding within your existing budget to fund this type of study and at the $50,000 to $150,000 range?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we do.
Would you want to explore a joint venture with the legislature if we could break away any funds? I'm just talking off the top of my head here. I mean,
if that would expedite the process of getting the study done, we'd certainly encourage that approach. Whatever would get the work done in a timely way to be useful to the committee and to the commission, we'd support.
Okay, thank you very much,
if,
sir.
If I might just try to follow up on the apparent inconsistency, just very briefly, because I was present when the statement by the chairman was made. And I understand you'll discuss this directly with Chairman Cotton. But the Chugach discussion of the order arises out of a case where the commission was presented with a legal argument that the commission was compelled to authorize competition in the rail belt at this time under the current statutes and under a decision in a Ninth Circuit case. The commission's conclusion quite briefly was, no, that isn't so. The commission is not required to make that result. That finding in that case does not speak to whether the commission has a legal authority to allow competition where it appears to be in the public interest or to disallow competition where it is not in the public interest. And the commission's authority in those two respects is very clear, I believe, and that's what the lawyers have told us. So it was in response to a case that argued a particular legal perspective under federal antitrust law that the commission issued this recent order. I hope that context might be helpful.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Next, we'd like to hear from Municipal Power and Light. Light and Power, I'm sorry. It's the old SS gadget in my brain. It's been there too long. We also have more tech here. Are we okay? Would you like the lights off? Like the lights on or off? Or? With the lights off? Right. And for the record, too, looks like.
Thank you, Committee Chairman and members of the committee, for allowing us an opportunity to speak to you today. I brought with me our consulting attorney that we have retained to advise us and assist us on matters associated with deregulation. This is Mr. Don Winnell. We have worked pretty laboriously the last couple of weeks to develop a presentation for you that I hope will fall well within our 20-minute bracket. I'll kick him every time he needs to speed up, but...
Mira
Kohler, General Manager of Municipal Light and Power.
Thank you.
Chairman Rugberg, Chairman Sharp, members of the committee, my name is Don Winnell. It's a pleasure to appear here before you on behalf of Municipal Light and Power. We have made a written submission to the committee, which I believe has been distributed to all of you. The third section contains written remarks from which I will speak, but I will not have, obviously, adequate time to cover all of them. I would note at the outset, Mr. Chairman, that it was the legislature itself which put the word complex into issue here. In House Concurrent Resolution Number 34, the legislature described electric utility restructuring as a highly complex issue requiring careful and informed decision-making. MLMP agrees. We hope to assist your informed decision-making this morning. My focus is on five topic areas in our presentation. First, we'd like to discuss certain basic principles which we hope will animate your examination of electric utility restructuring in the state of Alaska. Second, we'd like to draw your attention to the precedent available outside in the lower 48, how the electric industry unfolded, how deregulation restructuring has transpired to date in other state jurisdictions. Third, we would like to tell you what you probably already know, that Alaska is in fact very different, and that the precedent available in other states has some relevance, but limited relevance to the issues facing you. Fourth, we would like to talk about a sampling of those complex issues that the legislature identified in its resolution. And last, we would recommend certain matters that you consider in exercising your duties and responding to the legislature in the next legislative session. We think that there are four basic principles that are worthy of your consideration. The very first and foremost of these is competition. MLMP, the municipality of Anchorage, believe that competition is good public policy. It promotes efficiency, it tends to reduce costs. But to be effective, competition must be viewed, as Commissioner Ornquist indicated, as a means, not an end in and of itself. Competition to be effective on behalf of consumers must be sustainable, and it must produce benefits which are demonstrable and which adequately address real consumer interests. In terms of developments in the lower 48, we know that regulators, the legislature, will be under severe pressure to elevate competition to an end in and of itself. This has produced in other circumstances a reliance upon artificial price decreases to satisfy consumer expectations. It has resulted in asymmetrical regulation, which does not serve the consumer or the public interest because it deprives consumers of the benefits and efficiencies available from integrated activities. The comments of Alfred Kahn, himself a regulator, were echoed, I think, in other publications. We wish to draw to your attention the notion that shouting competition in the regulatory or legislative proceeding often has the same effect as crying fire to theater. It tends to produce an emotional response, not a reasoned one. MLMP is in favor of competition, but on a reasoned basis. We do not believe that change for the sake of change is a useful public policy. If there's going to be change, there ought to be improvement. We do not favor disadvantaging various consumer groups or promoting change which produces asymmetrical benefits among individuals or groups of consumers. We think House Resolution 34 correctly notes this, notes that change should only be undertaken when improvements benefit the public will result generally. This is tied to a third principle that we would advance for your consideration, that of non-discrimination. MLMP believes that changes should not disadvantage those in remote, rural, or suburban areas. We think further that they should not produce windfall benefits to one class or another of consumers to the detriment of other classes of consumers. We think that this is particularly important where price impacts occur and where one of the consequences of such price impacts could be a reduction in the availability or the affordability of service to consumers. Finally, we note that Alaska issues require Alaskan solutions. I lived here for 11 years myself. I'm familiar personally with the expression, we don't care how they do it outside. In a certain measure, that would be a short-sighted, we think, view to adopt. There is useful experience data out there to be examined. On the other hand, we do believe that that expression is correct in the sense that Alaska entails very many internalities and externalities which are unique to this locale and cannot effectively be transported one way or the other into other jurisdictional experiences. We would note that the experiences in those other jurisdictions has not been uniformly satisfactory in terms of either the public policy sought to be pursued or the actual experiences which consumers have enjoyed, I guess is a word to be used, as a result of those policies. A competitive market necessarily entails vicissitudes. It entails winners and losers. And over the past 60 days, we have seen with a vengeance the effects of the vicissitudes of a competitive marketplace in the lower 48. Alaska's ability to absorb these kinds of vicissitudes and the negative impacts of competition and public policy failures is very, very limited. Using those principles as a backdrop, we'd like to talk briefly about industry restructuring as it has transpired to date in the lower 48. Generally speaking, and again, we only have a certain amount of time to address these issues, industry restructuring has proceeded sequentially. It has rolled out in stages. Each succeeding stage was dependent upon the construct in the preceding stage. It was not full-blown, it was not cut out of whole cloth, but proceeded in degrees based upon empirical evidence and experience. If one were to look at restructuring outside in those areas before competition became part of the dynamic, and indeed predominantly the structure now occurring in Alaska, we would see a high degree of vertical integration. The generation, transmission, and local distribution components are integrated in one utility in a select serving area, which, as Commissioner Hornquist indicated in his testimony, currently tends to be monopolistic in nature. Cross-utility sales, to the extent they exist, are limited and defined, and they are usually to address peaking or emergency requirements. A possible paradigm for a competitive environment begins to demonstrate, again, the complexities to which HCR number 34 alludes. If we focus in historical as well as logical progression, if we look at the generation, you will notice that in the lower 48, competition is premised upon a multiplicity of generation sources. Vertical disintegration is beginning, but equally important, separate generation has occurred over a long period of time. Separate generators mean or imply at least differing prices, differing terms, and differing availabilities, and this is the true genesis of competition in the electric industry. But to have those competitive generators actively engaged in the market, they have to get to that market. Therefore, issues concerning transmission have arisen. These requirements generally go into the broad rubric of comparability, by which regulators or policy makers mean open and equal access to physical facilities, access to equivalent information in order to utilize effectively those facilities. It has to do with codes of conduct. As was discussed earlier, transmission facilities tend to be bottlenecked in nature. They cannot be effectively economically replicated. And so they have to be managed to ensure non-discrimination in the sale and provisioning of power. It involves codes of conduct, independent systems, operations, power exchanges, and other issues. The generation and then the subsequent transmission issues giving rise to them are both precursors to the final act we are witnessing in the lower 48 of competition in the local distribution market, or retail wheeling, as it is sometimes known. Retail wheeling can entail all of the issues associated with transmission because the local distribution network is itself a monopoly in most cases, a bottleneck facility. And it also involves issues associated with unbundling. Energy from the residential consumer perspective currently is thought of as a service. You pay one bill, you receive a service. The service itself is composed of many different elements. There's the energy, the delivery of the energy, the metering of the energy, the billing for that energy, the customer services associated with that, and so on. Existing structures, both corporate and regulatory, are not geared to the unbundling of these activities. And I think the lesson from telecommunications is that the unbundling of such integrated activities can take time, can take effort. It is certainly expensive and produces cost. And even in telecommunications, in some areas it's not clear the consumer benefits commensurate with that effort have been derived. The important thing to note in this sequence is the fact that it is a sequence. It has proceeded in stages. The lower 48 did not jump into local distribution competition yesterday and on a sole source whole cloth basis. Rather, it proceeded in stages, and as you will see, one of our recommendations is that restructuring in this state proceed in stages also.